I'm going to be reading in Psalm 107 this morning. And for those of you who haven't heard me before, I usually don't start shouting until midway through the sermon. So if I don't sound inspired at first, it's because I start slow, taxi down the runway, and then I take off. Psalm 107, verse 1. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his loving kindness is everlasting. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so, whom he has redeemed from the hand of the adversary, and gathered from the lands, from the east and from the west, from the north and from the south. I've been reading a book by Rick Hansen entitled Resilience, and I don't like it. I don't like it in the same way that I don't like medicine when I need it. The reason I don't like it is because he's saying basically all the same things that he said in a previous book by him that I read, and I'm realizing that I got suckered into buying this one because I like him as an author. At the same time, I am one of those people who need to go back and reread in order to finally start working it into my life. You know what I mean? It's like I got the ideas before and they're really good and I thought this is wonderful, underlined a bunch of stuff, but now I got to start living it. Resilience is the ability to recover quickly, emotionally, to bounce back from negative moods, negative experiences. And we start learning resilience usually as children. You know, we have those episodes when we throw tantrums and discover that those are not appreciated by our parents and discouraged from doing that again. And so we start to learn a little bit of control. But that doesn't mean that it's easy, and it doesn't mean that as an adult we've got it all worked out, where if we go into some kind of funk, well, we can just pull ourselves right out because we've learned resilience. I'm reading about resilience because I'm not a very resilient person. My negative moods treat me as their home, not a hotel. So I try to explain to them, look, you're just camping out here. You really don't belong here, but they don't listen. Anyway, one of his chapters is devoted to gratitude. And he talks about how gratitude helps us to be more resilient. He says, we spend our lives seeking to feel good in the future, but this is stressful and tiring in the present. With gratitude, you feel good already. Thankfulness feels good in its own right. And so he tells us that researchers have discovered that thankfulness brings more optimism, happiness, and self-worth, less envy, anxiety, and depression, more compassion, generosity, and forgiveness, stronger relationships, less loneliness, better sleep, greater resilience. Wow, all these wonderful benefits of living a life of gratitude. And I'll tell you right now, it isn't going to work. And what I mean is we're not going to get all these wonderful benefits of gratitude by being thankful just one day a year. Okay, so my dad said, you know, what we should have is a national gripe day one day a year. And then the rest of the year, be thankful. And, now my dad, he was automatically this, you know, resilient, grateful person. I have to work at it. We have to learn thankfulness every day. And what Rick Hansen says, once we start looking for reasons to be thankful, we find many in each day. Many things today for us to be thankful for. And if we catch that and look, we won't be there yet, but we'll be on our way. The more we find to be grateful for, the more pops up. Another book that helped me, and I, if you're a reader, I would put this on your reading list today. It would be required reading in our class. All right? And that is 1,000 Gifts by Anne Voskamp. And some of you perhaps have read that already. It's a beautiful book. She was inspired while sitting in a hair salon and noticing a woman reading another book, 1,000 Things to Do Before You Die. And it got her thinking, and then she came up with this idea of writing out a list of 1,000 things for which she was thankful. Now, the first point that she establishes in her book, because it begins very dark, is that she knows pain. And she knows grief, and she knows suffering, intense pain, and loss. So it's not a Pollyanna book by any means. In fact, throughout, she reminds us that life is hard, but that one response to the hardships of life is looking for those things to be thankful, to feel grateful toward, whatever. I'm sorry, my English isn't that good today. She says, Jesus and his disciples did not have enough food to feed a multitude. So what did he do? He gave thanks. He gave thanks for not having enough to give to the multitude. And as soon as he gave thanks, there was enough and more than enough. And she points out that give thanks in the Greek is Eucharisteo. In the high church, communion or the Lord's Supper is called Eucharist. That's because Eucharist is a giving of thanks, according to Paul in 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians. The word Eucharisteo is built upon the word charis, which is grace. And grace is a cognate of kara, which is joy. And so she says, as long as thanks is possible, then joy is always possible. Whenever, meaning now, wherever, meaning here. The holy grail of joy is not in some exotic location. The only place we need to see before we die is this place of seeing God here and now. That there's enough here and now to be grateful for, to give thanks for, in order to release God's grace into our life, and that grace will then bring joy. If we can get to God through giving thanks, then we get joy and other things that benefit us. This psalm encourages us to give thanks to the Lord. And immediately it gives us a reason. For he is good, for his loving kindness is everlasting. You know, again, this is me, but it's you too. I know it's you too sometimes. That we can live through years of God's faithfulness to us, where somehow he pays that bill, he provides that food, he gives us the clothes we need to go to this interview or whatever it is. But the next difficulty that comes up, my first reaction is worry. Oh no, oh no, what will happen? The world's going to cave in on me. And sometimes it's as though God were telling me, why don't you trust me now? And just look at my history with you. Why don't you trust me now? And sometimes my answer is because I don't deserve it this time. And his response is, you have never deserved it. And I can only nod. And like you know, chuckle or chortle. I don't know which that was. But, that's right. That's what grace is. It's this gift that is undeserved. I think that this is the logic behind Psalm 136. Oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. Let the house of Israel say, his mercy endures forever. Let the house of Aaron say, his mercy endures forever. Let those who fear the Lord say, his mercy endures forever. 26 verses, and each one of them ends with, his mercy endures forever, or his loving kindness endures forever. And when you read that, especially if you read it aloud with a group, it's so redundant. You read, his mercy is everlasting, or his loving kindness is everlasting. You get the feeling like, yes, it is. This is going on forever. We just keep repeating this refrain. But I think that's the logic of that psalm. I think that's why it is so repetitive. It's that we need to get this feeling. One time, the English preacher Charles Spurgeon, great 19th century soul, when he was a small child, his grandfather, who's also a preacher, was reading the Bible, and he came to this passage about the bottomless pit. And Spurgeon asked his grandfather, Grandpa, what does that mean? And his grandfather just kept reading. The next day, his grandfather read the same passage. And when he came to the bottomless pit, Spurgeon again asked, Grandpa, what does that mean? And the next day, he came to the same passage. And again, when he got to the bottomless pit, Spurgeon asked, until about the fifth day, and he stopped asking because he got what it meant. You fall and fall and fall and fall and fall and fall. And the next day you fall and fall and fall, and you just continue fall, because there's no bottom to this. In the same way, there's no bottom to the loving kindness of God. So give thanks to the Lord because he's good. I will tell you, there have been times in my life when the circumstances were so grieving, God was my only good. So, if God's always there, and he is, then we can always give thanks. I can't always say, I give thanks to the Lord because my bank account is good. You know, or my health is good, or whatever it is. But I can always say, for he is good. And his loving kindness endures forever. Well, this is what it takes for us to become grateful people. Coming back to this over and over and over again. We are told here that if we are redeemed, we're to say so. Why is that? Well, the obvious reason is to give God credit for what he's done and to show him our appreciation. We're going to give thanks. And expressing it makes it a fuller experience. Do you know that if you say something, that it involves your whole brain more than if you just think a thought? You can think a thought and pretty much contain it in your prefrontal cortex. It doesn't even go down to the hippocampus where it can be stored in memory. But if you speak it, it gets your left hemisphere going. And then speaking it out loud, it also gets the part of your brain that articulates speech going, and your body is engaged. So you have a greater experience of that which you say out loud. And so we have this fuller experience of gratitude by saying it. But also, we want this to become our new habit. Right? What's my habit now? Oh, you got to be kidding me. Or, you jerk. You know, signal if you're going to turn. Or whatever. You know. We want to replace these old habits of griping and complaining. And once we get a collection of godly habits, it becomes a lifestyle. It becomes us. The us we want to be. All right. Then in verse 4 of this psalm, the poet gives us the example of people who wandered in the wilderness. They wandered in the wilderness in a desert region. They did not find a way to an inhabited city. They were hungry and thirsty. Their soul fainted within them. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. He delivered them out of their distresses. He led them also by a straight way to go to an inhabited city. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his loving kindness and for his wonders to the sons of men. For he has satisfied the thirsty soul, and the hungry soul he has filled with what is good. Lost, disoriented, short on provisions, we all run into more than enough bewildering situations. You know that the word bewildered means to be lost in the wilds, the wilderness. And we are bewildered sometimes when a repair needs to be done on the car or the house, and we don't even have close to enough money to cover it. Or we find that one of the children is addicted to drugs or has gotten into some trouble at school or with the law. Or everyone else on the freeway is driving 80 miles an hour and I get ticketed for driving 75. And then it's explained to me, you're slowing down the flow of traffic. And that threatens job security. So you get the ticket. Anyway, God found these lost souls that were bewildered, and he led them to safety. He led them to water. He led them to food. He led them to a city where they're no longer lost. In verse 8, we have the refrain or the chorus to this song, and it's followed by a specific reason. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his loving kindness, for he has satisfied the thirsty soul, the hungry soul he's fed. And this is wonderful. Can you see what repeated redemption does for us? Let the redeemed of the Lord say so. Repeated redemption gives us hope. Real quickly, it's been a while. I think it was mid-20th century that some researchers, some scientists in, I believe it was Norway, did experiments on wharf rats. Now, see, no one cares about wharf rats, so they could experiment with wharf rats. And they put them in these vats full of water. And though the rats could tread water, they could not escape the vat. And so they let them tread water until they gave up and went down. And just as they were going down, they grabbed them and pulled them out of the vat. Now, typically, it was 3 to 4 hours that they'd sink. And then they'd pull them out. They'd rescue them. Then later on, they'd put them back in the vat. And they'd tread water again. Only this time, they would tread water for 12 hours before they would sink. And when the scientists explained the difference, they said they had experienced salvation. So they had hope that they would be saved again. I just have to tread water long enough. Right? So that tells us something about learned helplessness, but also learned hopefulness. You know, our strength gives out because we don't know what we're capable of, and we feel exhausted and we give up. But once rescued, it increases our hope for the next time. So now these people have experienced a redemption and now they have greater hope. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his loving kindness. I wait for the Lord. My soul does wait. O Israel, hope in the Lord. This is from Psalm 130. O Israel, hope in the Lord. For with the Lord there is loving kindness, and with him is abundant redemption. To wait for God, we need to put our hope in him. Otherwise, we're not waiting, we're just killing time. Hope allows us breathing room to feel joy, even in spite of the fact that everything hasn't worked itself out yet. God's plan hasn't been revealed, and his salvation has not yet occurred. We're still waiting for that. But We still have space in this troubled time for joy because hope brings that to us. Thanking God for what he is going to do in the future is a way to have the joy of the future right now. I thank you, God, because I know you're going to take care of this for me. And you're going to work it out. All right, verses 10 through 16, the poet gives us the example of people imprisoned in darkness. There were those who dwelt in darkness and in the shadow of death, prisoners in misery and chains, because they had rebelled against the words of God and spurned the counsel of the Most High. Therefore he humbled them. Therefore he humbled their heart with labor, and they stumbled, and there was none to help. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. He saved them out of their distresses. He brought them out of darkness and the shadow of death and broke their bands apart. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his loving kindness and for his wonders to the sons of men, for he has shattered gates of bronze and cut bars of iron asunder. Of course, this can be a literal prison, or more commonly, I think, a state of mind, stuck in the dark chambers of resentment or depression or anger. The turning point comes in verse 13. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. Again, Anne Voskamp says, "Why should the world need more anger, more outrage? How does it save the world to reject unabashed joy when it is joy that saves us? Why does the world need more anger or more outrage?" Can anyone answer that? Do we really need to add to that? There's a surplus of anger in our society today, and there's a deficit of joy. And for her, it is in giving thanks that joy bubbles up. The Eucharisteo, the grace that causes the joy to bubble up. And again, the chorus and the specific reason, for he has shattered gates of bronze and cut bars of iron asunder. And if you have lived in one of those dark prison cells of the mind, you know it'll take something powerful to shatter the gates and set you free. There is a time when I was wrestling with horrible anxiety, not for a short period of time, but for a significant season of my life. And one day my mind was doing its repetitive loop of all the horrible scenarios that I could come up with. And in a moment, I just got off the phone with someone I had been counseling. And in that moment, I heard Jesus say, "I can take all of that away." And I said, "Do it." And he said, "Okay, here are the rules." And actually, there's only one rule. It was very simple. Stop thinking those thoughts. And, you know, they were a compulsion up until that moment. It was impossible to stop them because they came automatically. There were triggers I didn't even know about, and suddenly those thoughts were there. But that day, they all went away, and I lost those fears until they became real. But then, that's another thing. Okay, verses 17 through 22, the example of people who made wrong choices. Fools, because of their rebellious way and because of their iniquities, were afflicted. The soul abhorred all kinds of food, and they drew near to the gates of death. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. He saved them out of their distresses. He sent his word and healed them and delivered them from their destructions. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his loving kindness and for his wonders to the sons of men. Let them also offer sacrifices of thanksgiving and tell of his works with joyful singing. All right, when the scriptures, especially the Hebrew scriptures, talk about fools, they're not referring to mental incompetence. Rather, it refers to a person who knows better and goes right ahead and does the wrong thing. When we act foolishly, we create our own misery. When we know better and we do it, the consequences are, you know, exactly what you could expect. Some people, when they find themselves suffering the consequences of their own foolishness, feel like they cannot ask God for help. I got myself into this. He's not just going to gut me out of it. I have to live with it. But that's never the case. In verse 20, it says, he delivered them from their destructions. These are their destructions. They brought this on themselves, but he still delivered them when they called out. There might be some consequences, physiological or social consequences, that we can't stop that rolling ball from knocking down what it's going to knock down. But the spiritual consequences, like, God, am I far from you now? Have you left me? Have you deserted me? Whatever I might feel that way, those are all resolved. And in having those resolved, he braces us for whatever else we have to face to resolve it in this life also. Verse 23, the example of sailors on the high seas. Living here in Dana Point or nearby, you have to appreciate this. Those who go down to the sea in ships, who do business on great waters, they have seen the works of the Lord and his wonders in the deep. For he spoke and raised up a stormy wind, which lifted up the waves of the sea. They rose up to the heavens. They went down to the depths. Their soul melted away in their misery. They reeled and staggered like a drunken man and were at their wit's end. Isn't that so picturesque? Isn't that just how it is? I was on the high seas one time in the channel between Catalina and San Clemente Island, and coming back with some friends from a scuba adventure, and the swell got really big. I mean, it was like a 14-foot swell, so we'd go down in the trough and come up, but when we were in the trough, the next wave was over my head, and I was at the top of the ship. And man, it threw us around. You know, anyone trying to walk around in that on board, even a veteran of the sea, is going to, you know, wobble some. And in fact, the skipper got knocked so hard. He was sitting on his pilot seat that it broke the seat, and he went through the door next to him. So yeah, it was significant. I thought I was going to die, but. I knew I never wanted to go through that again. Anyway, this is so picturesque. It's so right. They rose up to the heavens. They went down to the depths. Their soul melted away in their misery. They reeled and staggered like a drunken man and were at their wit's end. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distresses. He caused the storm to be still so that the waves of the sea were hushed. Then they were glad because they were quiet. So he guided them to their desired haven. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his loving kindness and for his wonders to the sons of men. Let them extol him also in the congregation of the people and praise him at the seat of the elders. Okay, so here's the chorus. Let them give thanks to the Lord. And this time, there's not a reason, you know, because he's done this. Rather, there's more work for them to do. Let them extol him also in the congregation of the people. In other words, they get back home, you know, safe on land again, and they go into the precincts of the temple, and when given the opportunity, they say, I have a testimony. I want to tell you what God did for us on the ocean, on the Mediterranean this last week. Let them go and tell what God has done for them. There's a very important reason for this action. In the Old Testament Hebrew language, there is no word to say thank you. Now, that seems very weird to us when we're raised with the courtesy rhythm of please and thank you. Everything has to work this way. But not in the ancient Hebrew language or the Arabic language. So you cannot just go to a person and say thank you and feel like now everything's cool. Rather, if you received something from a person, a gift, a rescue, or whatever, you were indebted to that person. That was a real debt. And you had to pay it off. And how could you pay it off, especially if you did not have money? Well, more important than money was honor. That was the social capital of those ancient cultures around the Mediterranean. And so you would go and tell others what a generous heart your benefactor had, and give details of what that benefactor did for you. In other words, you're telling on them, you're praising them for their goodness to you. And by telling others, you're spreading the honor of that person. You're helping others to have a view into that person. So go and tell others what God has done for you. And, you showed your gratitude. You did not just say it. And you can almost see this ancient person in the Mediterranean world saying, I am going to go and tell everyone what a huge heart of generosity you have. Okay? I promise. This I'm going to pay my debt. And you know what this is? This is called the vow of praise. Right? For instance, Psalm 50, offer to God a sacrifice of thanksgiving and pay your vows to the Most High. I swear, God, I'm going to tell everyone what you've done for me. Okay? Then when you do that, when you start doing that, you're paying off that vow. You are paying off the debt you owe in giving thanks. It sounds odd to us, but it makes so much sense in their context. All right. What the poet gives us now is a list of the ways that God helps people. He changes rivers into a wilderness and springs of water into a thirsty ground, a fruitful land into a salt waste because of the wickedness of those who dwell in it. He changes a wilderness into a pool of water and a dry land into springs of water. And there he makes the hungry to dwell so that they may establish an inhabited city and sow fields and plant vineyards and gather a fruitful harvest. Also he blesses them and they multiply greatly, and he does not let their cattle decrease. When they are diminished, bowed down through oppression, misery, and sorrow, he pours contempt upon princes and makes them wander in a pathless waste. But he sets the needy securely on high, away from affliction, and makes his families like a flock. The upright see it and are glad, but all unrighteousness shuts its mouth. Okay, I wasn't going to tell you this because I've told it before, and those of you who've been with me for a long time, I know you've heard it, but it used to be on Sunday mornings when I was a pastor and I had a church. On my way to church, I would listen to this Pentecostal gospel preacher, and I just loved him because he did it so well. And one day, he's talking. Now, you know, in his church, he gets a lot of verbal encouragement, a lot of, preach it, brother. Amen. Bless him, Lord. Bless him. When the women get really excited, it's, oh, bless him. And I've seen it. I've been there. So he says, the pastor stops. He's not getting enough. You know, he needs more encouragement. You know, let's be more vocal here. So he says, now I know a pastor who went fishing with a deacon. And they're in the boat, it's a pristine lake, and the deacon is the first to hook a fish. He's so proud because he's going to show the pastor, he's a real fisherman. And he starts reeling in this fish, and just as he gets it to the boat where he's going to get his net under it, the fish gets off the line and swims away. And he just lets loose with an expletive that echoes across the lake. And the pastor says, brother, brother, brother. Pretty soon, deacon gets another hook, another fish on the line. The same thing happens, and he lets out with another expletive that ripples across the lake. Then the pastor snags a fish. You know, it's a beauty. He can see it jumping out of the water. It's a rainbow trout, and he's pulling it in. It gets closer and closer. He's going to show the deacon, you honor the Lord, you catch the big fish. And he's got it right up to the boat, and he gets it right up to the rail and gets his net under it, and it gets off the hook and swims away. And the pastor shakes his head and turns to the deacon and says, somebody ought to say something. So So the pastor is telling his congregation somebody ought to say something. What is God doing in these verses? Well, he's changing circumstances. And for the unrighteous, the circumstances are going from well-watered to dry. But for the righteous, for those who have called on him and are trusting in him, he turns the wilderness into a pool. And so we see the positive effect that it has on those who witness these changes. The upright see it and are glad, but all the unrighteous shuts its mouth. The upright see it, and that's what prompts them to give thanks. But for the unrighteous, those same changes that affect them shut their mouths. Paul has this list of the vices of Roman society in Romans chapter 1, and towards the end of it, he says, neither were they grateful. And you think, wow, does that really rank with all these other sins? Does that really rank with murder? Neither were they thankful. So how important is it that we learn this? After reading Ann Voskamp's book, I began my own list of 1,000 thanksgivings. And that was in 2012. Recently, I've pulled that list out, and I've been reading through it again. I really need this. I did not realize it until I was reading through it. That was 2012, and it carried on into 2013, and it's a wonderful exercise. And going back and reading it is good. I may have to do this again. But last night, Barbara showed me a video. She goes, Chuck, look at this. First I hear her, you know, going, wow, wow. And she goes, you've got to see this. So, and she knows better than to interrupt me when I'm watching TV. Did you think I was going to say reading my Bible? Anyway, I'm looking at a leaf. And it trembled slightly as if a light breeze was flowing past it. And then it opened up to reveal these incredible colors of its wings. It was a butterfly disguised as a leaf. It was so beautiful. And that took me back to my list, Thanksgiving number 60, on my gratitude list. Nature's genius, plants and animals hidden by their color and shape, protected, armed against predators. I just found that something to be thankful for. Like, this is just too cool. The last verse of the poem tells us how to go from here. Who is wise? Let him give heed to these things and consider the loving kindness of the Lord. Pay attention and consider, reflect, ponder, contemplate. Giving thanks draws us closer to God. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. You can't get past the gates if you're a complainer. You know? Enter his gates with thanksgiving. Giving thanks makes us more aware of God's presence in our own lives, his activity in our own lives. Living without gratitude, especially if instead we always feel cheated, neglected, discontent, upset with the system, living without gratitude closes us off to God. It's not that he goes anywhere, just the wall inside our own head and heart go down. The poet is saying, look for beauty. Look for goodness. Who's wise? The wise person will consider these things, or give heed to these things, pay attention to them, and consider the loving kindness of the Lord. They go, well, that was an example of God's loving kindness. It is possible to notice many blessings and not be changed by them and not become a grateful person. And that's because if our brains don't have enough time to rewire, to form new synaptic connections between neurons, then it's not going to stay. It won't last. It won't become habit. So the way to be with it long enough, and here Rick Hansen has this clever process, that all you have to do is just for a few moments enjoy the feeling of gratitude. Enjoy the feeling of seeing goodness. Enjoy the feeling of beauty. Just for a few moments, hold on to it. It doesn't take that long to get those dendrites reaching over to the other neuron. It does not take that long to get that action started. And the more it's repeated, the stronger those new connections will become. And that's what changes us. You know, there's a reason why the word repentance, the Greek word metanoia, means a change of mind. Because any changes in our lives are going to be changes in our brains and how things are connected there. And any new skill that you learn, there's a lot of adjustment in the brain to get that skill. Pay attention. Consider. And feel your appreciation that comes to you. Three other items from my gratitude list. I'm thankful for hope that doesn't depend on the world being good or people being nice. If I needed that. I'm thankful for funny mechanical things that make no sense, like a Felix the Cat wall clock. I'm thankful, and this happens to be my son Michael who's here today, I'm thankful for exceptional people who hire, care for, or simply love people with disabilities. Because those people naturally make people with disabilities feel accepted as they are. I encourage you to start your own list. I mean, if I had more control over your life, I'd make you. But so as far as I can encourage you or urge you, make your own gratitude list. And if it just seems like too much, like, oh, you just don't know me, I don't have anything, I'm a total Scrooge, just come up with 5 things. All right, don't start with like 1,000. Just come up with 5 and see if that doesn't like generate a few more things. And the point is that pretty soon you start being on the lookout for them. Is this something to be thankful for? No, this is traffic. However, I do get to peek into the window of that Bentley to see who the hell can afford one of these things. Or, you know, whatever. I mean, and be thankful that now I know. Start your own list. Add something to it every day. Because being God's people means becoming more responsive to Him in the here and now. Would you stand, please? May God in His infinite wisdom find a way to impress on your heart how much you are loved by Him, and that this loving kindness is forever. May the Lord bless us, keep away all evil, and lead us into eternal life. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.